Well then, a final corner crash from Max Verstappen cost him pole position and maybe even the championship. Welcome back to the Grid Talk podcast. My name's Louis Edwards and I'll be your host as we look at qualifying for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Joining me today is Tom Downey from the Everything F1 podcast.
Hello.
Jawad Waku from the from Hit the Apex Media.
How's it going? Hello.
And for a debut on the podcast, F1 writer Olivia Cairo.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So before we get into qualifying, this is the podcast's first show since the unfortunate passing of Sir Frank Williams. Of course, beloved team owner of the Williams Formula One team. He was in charge of it through all their glory years and even through their down period. And unfortunately, he passed away earlier this week. So Tom, you know, he was such a legend. Otherwise, he wasn't in past tense. He still is an absolute legend of Formula One.
Yeah. So, I mean, where do you begin with Frank Williams? I talked about this on our podcast on Tuesday, and the name Williams is synonymous with Formula One. When I was a kid in the 90s and coming into the early 2000s, I'm not giving away my age. I always heard of three teams. I always heard of Ferrari, because it was when Schumacher was beginning to get into his dominance and then started winning with the titles. You heard of McLaren because of the name, being British, all the rest of it. And then you always heard of Williams. So I the first thing I remember of Williams is I remember being a very, very, very young boy and hearing about Jacques Villeneuve winning in 97. That's my first memory of Williams. And then growing up, I remember it was about 2002, I think. I had a PlayStation, and I had this Williams steering wheel, F1 steering wheel. And I remember it was like a replica of one that you got in a Formula One car, and it had the BMW logo in the middle. And I always picked a Williams car when I went in there, because I had a steering wheel that said Williams, because Williams was the name that I knew. And F1 mourns the loss of Frank Williams, but we should also celebrate everything that he has achieved for the sport. The company, the team that he built with his bare hands, you know, quite literally. There's a story of him going out to a phone box and making a call to, I can't remember what he did, but to sell something, because the electricity had been cut off to the building because he was scrimping so much. And we know how much Formula One costs these days to even get into it, let alone setting up a team. And when you see what he developed, what he built, if you look at some of the cars, some of the drivers, some of the staff that have come through Williams over the years, the likes of Sir Patrick Head, you know, synonymous with Williams. He gave Sebastian Vettel his debut, Juan Pablo Montoya. And then that's before we even get into all the championships and all the top tier drivers that drove for Williams. And then I think it's a bit poignant that I think it's a bit poignant that we go to Saudi just after he's passed, because Saudi Air was the first title sponsor he brought into Williams. So in some ways, that is almost like a really, really touching tribute. And just want to say, Sir Frank, thank you.
And Olivia, he mentioned that. Tom mentioned that he built this team from his literal. It's an old school, you know, Formula One team started from nothing, and it's gained so much success, and it was so much down to him. And as Tom also mentioned, the incredible drivers that have come through Williams, is just incredible, isn't it?
It is, and you also have to also think about how much of a trailblazer Williams has been, because right now they have Jamie Chadwick as their test driver for Williams, which is quite cool, because that could mean that she could have an F1 drive soon as well. Also, Claire Williams being team principal for such a long time. It's quite, it's amazing to see women in Formula One taking such a stance, and for Williams to have been such a big part of that. It's such a testament to Sir Frank Williams. So it's sad to see him go, but also you have to remember to celebrate all he's done for F1. So it's wonderful.
Yeah. And Jared, all the teams this weekend have, you know, Frank Williams and his logo on their cars. And it just goes to show just, you know, how, you know, much he was respected throughout the entire F1 paddock, that every team is coming out and, you know, showing, you know, that Frank Williams really did mean a lot to this sport.
He did. And, like, you know, the legacy that he has left behind is quite an important one as well. And I summed him up the other day too, as a trailblazer for the sport. And obviously what he's left there, like Olivia was saying too, you know, Jamie Chadwick being in that position as well, and Claire Williams, what she did when she was in charge as well of the team through that really difficult time for the team as well. You know, you think about all the success they've had, they've also had quite a lot of hardship as well. But, you know, it's been so good to see that they've been able to stay in the sport for as long as they have, and in the kind of entity as an independent as well. And that was very important to Sir Frank and obviously Patrick Head as well at the time. Now, you know, it was important for their survival, you know, to evolve and adapt and, you know, to be able to kind of lose that independent tag, or maybe moving forwards, they might not be in that same boat. But yeah, just, you know, the talent of drivers that they've had over the years, the world champions, obviously, like for us here in Australia, obviously we think Alan Jones, you know, quite special that he was not only, you know, first world champion since Jack Brabham, but also first world champion for Williams as well, drivers champion. So, you know, and in that Saudi car as well, like Tom was saying. So yeah, him, Damon Hill, Jack Villeneuve, you know, Nigel Mansell, just so many great names. And then even through the 2000s, you know, you said Montoya, there was Weber, of course, Nico Rosberg, Sebastian Vettel, Nico Hülkenberg, you know, that awesome pole lap that he had in Brazil as well, in a Williams. So many great memories for Williams. So sad to see Sir Frank go, but, you know, he leaves behind such an important legacy, and I'm glad that the teams have all pulled together to pay tribute to him this weekend. I wouldn't have expected any less, but yeah, it's so good. And Russell as well with his tribute helmet, it's quite touching as well.
Yeah, it's so nice to see the sport all come together to celebrate, you know, his life and, you know, what he was able to achieve. And he will be sorely missed, even though he did step away from Williams, of course. Last season, he's still as a character and as someone who's played such a vital role in the careers of so many drivers. He will be deeply missed. But from there, Tom, we do need to talk about qualifying, and it was Lewis Hamilton who's taken quite a crucial pole position in terms of the world championship. Edged out his teammate by over a tenth, but going into Q3, it did look like Lewis was struggling a bit with the car, but at the end, he did, you know, absolutely pull it out of the bag.
Yeah. First of all, what's a qualifying session, full stop? I mean, obviously, with the new track comes a bit of unknown, but that was thoroughly enjoyable. And Lewis did put in an absolute storming lap to get pole position in the first place. And as we all know, I'm a Max Verstappen fan, so I'm saying this with gritted teeth. And I'm trying not to detract too much from it. But coming into Q3, it really looked like Red Bull had the upper hand, which I wasn't necessarily expecting coming into this weekend. But then as the temperature started to drop, we did see a bit of a favour towards the Mercedes. But then also there were talks on Sky Sports that perhaps the Mercs had fueled up for both qualifying runs in one hit, so they didn't have to come back in and refuel the cars, which, given given this track, and we were expecting an accident, I just didn't think it would be Max. Max, why? We'll get on to that. It was a stroke of genius by Merck, and it sort of made Red Bull go, oh, heck, we need to put one out the bag, which they so nearly did. But in Sergio Lewis's lap, it still wasn't a perfect lap. The car just didn't look quite settled in, certainly in the sort of first two or three turns, or you know, first sort of roughly sort of turn one to turn three or four. It just looked like the back end was just sliding a bit, and we did see that with a few cars this weekend. And also, crucially, he did more laps in Q2 on that medium tyre. So that medium tyre is going to be about 5 laps old as opposed to 2 laps old on the Red Bull. And I know that only sounds like 3 laps, but that it's these fine margins which this 2021 season has balanced on. It could make all the difference.
Yeah, it could do. And yeah, not only will he be starting on the sort of older, if you can say older tyres, because they technically are, he'll also be starting on the side of the grid, Olivia, that hasn't actually been too great so far. In from the F2 races we've seen so far, that inside line that Bottas will have for tomorrow does seem to be a bit better, because you can have the inside line for turn one and then squeeze the other driver onto the curb for turn two. So could Bottas really come into play tomorrow, especially if Bottas gets a good start?
He really could, because that means that Max is right behind Lewis on the side of the track that seems to be problematic. So it's up in the air, really, because we don't know what could happen with both title fighters. Because now, Max could have a tow from Lewis, but how good could that be if the side of the track he's on is kind of rough and tough? But yeah, no, Bottas could, but I feel like with Bottas, it's really hard to know how his starts could go, because he has really weird reaction time, he goes into, I don't know if it's anti-stall or he looks like he's going backwards with Bottas. It's very odd with him, but could be an interesting one, an interesting start.
Yeah, Bottas lining up second, which of course is good for Mercedes. You can technically clinch the Constructors' World title this weekend, but they have to outscore Red Bull by 40 points, yeah. Which unless both Red Bulls don't finish is highly unlikely. But they will be glad, Jared, that they are ahead of third place Max Verstappen, who could have taken pole, probably should have taken pole, but one lockup, bit hard press on the throttle, and that was it. That was the end of his qualifying.
Just like that. And, 27 corners as well, the longest the most corners that they have at any track this year. So, to bin it right at the end was just one of those heart in your mouth moments. Like, I don't know how Tom was saying how he felt, before we went on air. And yeah, it's just like, even as a neutral, you could probably say it's easy to feel the same way, but he was so good throughout the entire qualifying anyway, just, purple sector after purple sector. And it just looked like he kept finding time on parts of the track that you didn't think that you could go any faster. Like, obviously, first time here, and we don't know what the absolute limits are until now, we've found. But like even you were saying, it's so dizzying just watching the onboards, because it's like left, right, left, right, left, right, and just so fast. But yeah, I think hopefully they don't get they don't have to change the gearbox. It did look pretty light, the damage, starting from third, and it's such a short run to turn one, very much like Singapore. And we know we've seen first corner carnage at Singapore at the front as well. So if we can avoid anything like that, that's going to be crucial. But yeah, it's going to be one of those races where not going to see overtaking much, and it might come down to what happens in the pit stops very much. So I don't think it's all lost for Max starting from third, but yeah, given the pace that we saw from him during qualifying, it was a real shame that he won't be on pole position.
Yeah, I do actually want to get all your opinion on this, because Tom, like, you were disappointed that Max is not going to be on pole, but they were saying when they were looking at the onboards after qualifying that there didn't seem to be any sort of like real disparity between the Mercedes and Red Bull in terms of straight line speed. And given just how quick Max is through that first sector, it could give him an edge over the Mercedes, especially when he's just going to be in a DRS train, essentially, what we're expecting tomorrow.
Yeah, and whilst some people are saying, oh, Max has blown the rest of it, he's still starting P3. You know, he is behind Hamilton, and all it takes is one good launch and Hamilton just gives him the smallest of slipstreams. Max will stick that car somewhere where the sun don't shine and he will stop. He will basically say to Hamilton, right, you either break or we repeat Monza or something and then we roll on to next week. So it's not like he's starting at the back of the grid or he's starting P10. Obviously, this is subject to if he does need to change his gearbox. If he does need to change his gearbox, different story. But I'm at the moment, I'm talking as if he doesn't need to, because it doesn't appear that he does. Realistically, he's going to make light work of Bottas if he even gets up behind him at all. He will squeeze Bottas and he'll just run rings around him. There's no disrespect to Bottas, but this is why Hamilton and Verstappen are the two elite top drivers in F1. There are some very, very, very good drivers in other teams, but at the moment, you cannot look past Hamilton and Verstappen. And this is where that talent will shine. So tomorrow, he's still not in a bad position. You know, if Hamilton sort of slips a launch or something, or doesn't quite get the bite right as he launches, plus the tyres he's on just going to be that bit older, like we talked about. You know, Max, he could still easily do it tomorrow. Strategy could come into it. He's going to need Perez to clear Leclerc pretty quickly, get up to P4, or ideally get even higher again, but let's be realistic here. A win for Max is certainly not out of contention at all.
Yeah, it's I did say in my intro, but I think some people are taking this as sort of gospel that Max has now bottled this championship. But Olivier, as we've mentioned, he's starting on fresh tyres. They're maybe a few laps fresher, but fresher nonetheless. Those differences do make, you know, marginal gains are big in Formula One. It isn't over for Verstappen, and we've seen, you know, even his race pace hasn't been terrible. He does have a chance tomorrow.
Yeah, he does. Just like you said, obviously it's not ideal because it's a lot like Monaco where there's not much overtaking. But I do think there's still the opportunity for Max to keep on in the lead of a championship, because just like you said, again, the pit stops, he has a chance to maybe do have an undercut, overcut. I don't know how it works at Jeddah, because this is the first time that we're going here. But I don't think he has completely binned it. It just sucks though, because I'm also a Verstappen fan. But that lap, his last lap, the Q3 lap, I honestly believe that would have been pole, just the way he was pushing. But I think with the pace that he has right now, there is quite the chance that in the first lap, when lights go out, he could launch ahead of Hamilton. But also Bottas is on the other side, so it really is up in the air, but I don't think it's completely done. If not, I still don't think that the gap in the championship would be considerable enough for a winner to be determined in this race. But I think, I honestly, it really is up in the air for this one. But yeah.
Yeah. If any of you listeners aren't aware of how the championship can pan out, the condition for Max to win this weekend is if he finishes first with the fastest lap, Lewis has to finish sixth or lower. First without the fastest lap is seventh or lower. And if he finishes second, yeah, no, it's second with the fastest lap, he has to, Lewis will be 10th or lower. And if he doesn't get the fastest lap and second place, Lewis will not have to finish at all. I think I'm correct on that. They've put it up so much this weekend, I feel like I really should know it. But Jared, we'll move on to P4. Charles Leclerc, considering he had an absolute horror show in Qatar in terms of qualifying, he's got his best qualifying since Turkey, and it was a pretty mighty lap, and he's got ahead of one of the Red Bulls.
He has indeed, and yeah, prime position in case anything does happen with the top three as well during the race. So, you know, like we were saying with Qatar, he absolutely had a shocker, and this time it's his teammate who's ended up having the it's a bit of a reversal. So I have a sneaking suspicion, you know, and when we do predictions later, I'll probably say, yeah, I could expect P3 for Leclerc in this one. But yeah, splitting the Red Bulls as well, quite crucial, and just gives him that buffer. You know, we know, or I'm kind of consigned to the fact that, yeah, it's a bit lost for McLaren this year now, finishing third in the constructors. So, you know, for Leclerc to solidify that position for Ferrari will be important in this race. And looking quite good, got to say. They're just, you know, on, and this sort of circuit, you know, they've been really good at street circuits all year. They had the poles, obviously, in Monaco and Baku as well, I think. So, you know, fourth is pretty good considering they split the Red Bulls and, yeah, could be in the hunt for a trophy tomorrow.
Yeah. In the F2, after the first F2 race, it was a... whoever was controlling the flag behind the podium predicted a Max win, Lewis second, and a Leclerc third. Even though I don't know why he put the wrong flags up for the F2 after it was Liam Lawson and I think it was the other Kiwi. Is it Marcus Armstrong? No, he's Australian. I can't remember.
Piastri, isn't it?
Piastri is
the
Aussie.
Is Piastri
the
Aussie?
Yeah. Sorry, Jared. Anyway, yeah, it was a New Zealand 1-2, and then an Estonian driver got third, and they put up the Dutch, the British, and the Monegas flag. So, you know, you might be right, Jared, come the end of...
doing a little rehearsal, hopefully.
Yeah. So, fifth place, Tom, was... Sergio Perez, and he looked pretty off it for a lot of this weekend, but he seemed to bounce back in qualifying, but still not enough. P5, not where he needs to be. He really needs to be fourth alongside Max, or even higher, you know, near Bottas. But he's got to make sure he clears Leclerc as soon as possible tomorrow.
Yeah, it was a better Saturday for Perez, because he didn't have the best of weekends in Qatar, should we say. Also, not the best of qualifyings. So it's nice to see him up there. You could argue he should be P4 with the pace of that Red Bull, but Leclerc is an exceptional driver. And he wasn't too far off in his defence. But in terms of him getting up there, you're absolutely right. He needs to get that Ferrari dealt with as soon as possible. You'd like to think he would, because Perez has proven how good an overtaker he is this year when he has had to come from some bad grid spots. And you would think that he'll sort of clear that Ferrari relatively quickly, whether it's on the first lap, whether it takes, sort of say, I don't know, 10 laps with the DRS train or something. He will get him out of the way, and he's going to need to be up there to basically provide rear gun cover to Max, you know, and you know, we say it time and time and time again with Perez, he's so good with the tyres, with eking out two stops into a one stop. If Red Bull can get him up there, and as harsh as it is, sacrifice his race, or you know, perhaps sacrifice his chance at a win to force Mercedes into an alternative strategy on a track which is an unknown, that could play into their advantage, because that's one flexibility Red Bull have with Perez, arguably over Mercedes with Bottas, is that Bottas isn't really like the tyre whisperer, whereas Perez certainly has an element of Dr. Zeus about him when it comes to getting the tyres to do what he wants. So it should be good for Perez tomorrow, I would say. He can't go into the race expecting a win because he must know. And I'd imagine Red Bull would have told him to say, look, hun, if you're winning, we're going to get you out of the way for Max, which if I was Perez, I would, you know, I know I'd be there to do that. But yeah, hopefully good for him tomorrow. I just hope he don't go backwards.
Yeah. Just on the topic of Red Bull, it has been confirmed that they are not going to appeal any of the decisions or protest any of the decisions made by the FIA towards Lewis Hamilton with his ignoring double wave yellows and impeding of Nikita Mazepin. So that's one thing with Lewis is not going to have to worry about tomorrow. But we now move on to Pierre Gasly, who won't be getting a penalty for his impeding of Carlos Sainz, Olivia. He's just getting a bit of a telling off, really. But still, P6, 2/1000ths of a second off Sergio Perez in the main Red Bull car. Gasly is just on fire, and he just shows it week after week.
He really does. I think that's like his position, P6, for the whole year. I mean, it's a good thing that he's up there, but you kind of feel bad for him because he doesn't have a Red Bull seat. I mean, Sergio Perez is doing a good job, but then you also have to kind of ask yourself, does Gasly also deserve it as well? But Albon's coming back for Williams, which is also interesting. But Pierre Gasly has been actually doing a really good job this whole season. But as for the FIA ruling, again, I don't know. You never know how to feel about what the FIA says nowadays, because it's not consistent. One time it's you get a slap on the wrist, the other time you're in jail for the weekend. You don't know anymore. But I think it's also a good thing, though, because it kind of leaves it up to racing and not that people are chasing to get back to the front when they've been put back or set back by a grid penalty. So I think that's a good thing going into tomorrow, that we'll have a race, an actual race focused on racing. So yeah, good for him.
Yeah, these FIA decisions, I think Lewis and Max are in kind of the category of their own when it comes to FIA rulings at the moment, because yeah. I don't think they want to impede this championship fight. Impede it as little as possible. Jared, P7, Lando Norris. McLaren he's looked very quick. He couldn't get the medium tyres to work in Q2, had to switch over to the softs. He's the only person in the top 10, I believe, who will be starting on the softs tomorrow. So even though this McLaren does have good pace and he's not in the worst starting position, he is kind of going to have to be sort of fighting with one arm tied behind his back tomorrow, considering those softs are likely to give up fairly early on.
Yeah, and I think the only like saving grace with the soft tire will be he could get a better start and possibly up a position or two, depending on how the other two ahead go. But yeah, it is very much going to be one hand tied behind the back, and only, you know, McLaren were targeting just getting one car into Q3, it seemed anyway. So I think, you know, P6, P7, that might be the maximum that they'll get on the day. But yeah, it's not looking that great for them particularly, but good on Lando for getting into Q3 as well. And just really, he's kind of just been carrying the team the whole year with his results and everything, and, you know, had the little bit of a dip in form in the second half of the season, or really since the Russian Grand Prix, but, you know, finishing strongly these last couple of races, I think will do all the world a good for confidence. And, you know, something other than like P9 or 10 would be nice as well, because I think he had like two races in a row recently where he finished 10th or whatever, and then 9th in Qatar. So if he can score a few more points, then yeah, that would be quite good.
Yeah, I think he'll like to go a weekend without a puncture, to be completely honest. So see if he can hold on to those soft tyres and not do what Lance Stroll did in FP3 and actually got a puncture on his soft tyres. Tom, P8, Yuki Tsunoda. Now, I think I do have to give some sort of special shout out to Yuki Tsunoda. He has been absolutely on it this weekend. He is a miracle of form that we've seen, the sort of turnaround we've seen from Yuki Tsunoda in the last couple of races. P8 in qualifying. But the question is, can he actually hold on to it? Because in Qatar, he dropped like a lead balloon. could he maybe just hang on to the points for this weekend?
I really want to see him hold on to the points because I have been very critical of Tsunoda. But I do think he is beginning to come into his element. I think he could hold on to the points this weekend. I think the track will certainly help him. Sorry, I'm watching the F2 on the other screen and Piastri is going at it with the Ruvler. God, it's tense. but in terms of Tsunoda, he could do, you know, he could, oh God, Piastri's just taking the lead. I will get to Tsunoda, I promise. He could hold on to the points and perhaps the circuit will do him a couple of favours in that respect, provided he doesn't get stuck in a DRS train. I think he could be all right. Who's he got directly behind him? I can't remember. Is it Giovinazzi?
He's got directly behind him will be Antonio Giovinazzi.
So yeah. So it's, you know, with you know, Gio's probably going to fall back, so that might give Tsunoda a bit of breathing room behind him. I just hope that Tsunoda doesn't get too tangled in with what's going on around him. It'd be good for AlphaTauri to get a decent set of points. They should have had decent points last week, but obviously did not. So we'll see.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see. But behind him, not directly behind him, but behind him on the grid, Olivier, is Esteban Ocon. Who had a sort of a rare sort of turn of events has outqualified his teammate Fernando Alonso. And he's looked pretty handy. The Alpine, it's been a weird sort of mix in the midfield. There's been such a, you know, one team's on top and then another team's on top. And maybe he could drag his Alpine to decent points, but it's still P9. It's not a terrible result considering what the season that Ocon's had this year.
Yeah, no, it's not. And just like you said, it's kind of odd. You never know where either Alpine car is going to end up. Could be at the top and like top six, could be at the bottom and the bottom 20. I mean, bottom 15, I don't know. It's really hard to know, but considering how things have been going for Ocon, it's quite a good position to start in. Hopefully, yeah, he could get good points. It could be interesting to see if Alonso could do the same, rise through the grid for a decent points finish for both of the cars. But Ocon could hold on to the position. I think he will. It's a good competitive one for him.
Yeah, and especially when he's got both AlphaTauris ahead of him. They've still got this title, this constructors battle with AlphaTauri still going on. So, yeah, he's going to have to get up there somewhere. But rounding up the top 10, Jared, is Antonio Giovinazzi. Not something I would have expected, considering he is on his way out of the sport. But I remember someone in commentary made a joke that this track is very Formula E like. Maybe Formula E, and considering he's moving to Formula E, maybe you know tracks like this are going to suit him.
It's just a bit of a rehearsal for next year. But yeah, fourth time this year he's made it into Q3. But I think every time he has been in Q3, he's dropped like a lead balloon, like you guys say, on the first lap. So I don't, you know, expect him to keep that position at all. You never know. He might get lucky, but he's had good qualifying pace this year, you know, relative to his teammate, of course, but just can't do anything in the race about it. So I'm not expecting much from him tomorrow, to be honest. And yeah, you've got guys like Ricciardo, Alonso behind. Sainz, I reckon, might, you know, sneak into the points there. So, yeah, I don't think Gio's going to stay put for long, but you never know.
Yep, you never know. The Italian Jesus may pull off a miracle. So, Tom, P11, Daniel Ricciardo. I mentioned that it was pretty obvious that McLaren were only really targeting one car in Q3. And Daniel Ricciardo, he's 11th. He gets a start on a fresh set of tyres in a track which I think tyres are going to be quite, especially front tyres, are going to be quite limited. So it's not the worst place to start. But given Daniel Ricciardo's record of actually, you know, recovering from these positions, we may not actually need to expect too much from him tomorrow.
No, I think the harsh reality is Danny Rick's not going to get that far ahead tomorrow. And it's like, watch it now, as I said, that he'll come through like P3 or something. It'd be sod slow, wouldn't it? But the brutal reality is, how many times have we seen that this season where Danny Rick is just not been on the pace of Lando or been on the pace of the Ferraris, who has been battling so close with it, has been battling so close with it in the championship this year. And I hasten to say it because, yes, Danny Rick is a race winner. And I'm sure it's McLaren are the only team with a 1-2 this season as well, which still blows my mind to this day. If Danny Rick would have gone into Q3 a few more times, he'd have been in better positions to start a race, especially if you look at like the likes of Monaco or something, where overtaking is notoriously difficult. McLaren would have been in a much, much better position in the constructors. And if he'd have been better this season, that could have been the difference between third and fourth for them in the constructors. As for tomorrow, I think he's got to hope for maybe a bit of shenanigans in front of him that he can take advantage of. Hopefully he won't get caught in a DRS train or get caught in like a lap one melee or something. But I fear it's going to be a fairly quiet race in terms of we don't hear much from him on the commentary other than he's pitted.
Yeah, it tends to be that. And starting next to him, Olivia, Kimi Raikkonen, P12, had a little bit of a, I don't know how way to put it, but Bottas, well, in his attempt to try and get out of the way, he actually hit Kimi as he came out one of the many corners in the Saudi Arabia track. But still, P12 is really good. And, you know, this is his second to last, race in Formula One. He's looking like he's not going to go out without a fight.
Oh, is this for me? Sorry, my connection kind of was wonky. Is this about Raikkonen?
Yeah.
No. I don't know what to say because I guess he's kind of very nonchalant about things. So, but he does put his elbows out when he's racing. So I guess he could end up in the points as well, could displace his teammate. But I don't know. It's really hard to know with him because it could go either way as well. The pace of the car is kind of inconsistent. But I think he's one of those drivers that outperforms the car. So he could get up in the points, but I doubt it would be an interesting track for him racing on. I guess it's fast and everything, but not much overtaking for him to do. So I feel like he'll be stuck in 12th, maybe up one, but yeah, not much for him to do.
Yeah, he's a man of few words, and I imagine he has very few words to say about this track as well. But you're starting ahead, Jared, of Fernando Alonso, P13, which, given the fact that he's generally outqualified Ocon this season, to be four places lower than Ocon means that maybe Fernando just isn't feeling this track or just isn't feeling the car on this track, and it maybe isn't quite respective of actually where his pace may be.
Yeah, probably a bit of column A, a bit of column B. for me, I think the most entertaining part of qualifying with Fernando was his reaction to Max's lap. I don't know if you've seen the images of him being interviewed and him watching it on the screen. And then, yeah, just the way he and Ricardo reacted to the crash as well was quite entertaining. So, but yeah, no, I don't think, given the top 10 pace that we've seen from Ocon, Alonso's qualifying position is respective of that. So, you know, I'm sure he can hustle a few positions during the race, and they can have a good, they've been really good with their, you know, tire life as well. So I'm sure they can kind of wrestle something out of the bag for race day. And, you know, like what Tom was saying about Ricardo not moving anywhere, it's probably true because he gets caught in too many DRS trains and doesn't really make much headway. So I feel like, yeah, your Alonso's and your Sciences are probably going to come through a bit better than the other guys.
Yeah, Fernando is nothing but a, sort of a hustler on lap one. I'm sure he'll be able to find his way through. P14, George Russell, Tom, you know, Mr. Saturday, gets through to Q2. It's pretty much a cliche now. We're going to kind of miss this when he moves to Mercedes, when he's in Q3 pretty much every weekend. But P14, it's not the worst place to start, but realistically, he's not really going to go anywhere, is he?
No. I mean, you pretty much said it's what we almost expect from George Russell now, which is also a testament to how well Williams have improved over the last sort of two seasons, because they've been on a downward trajectory since, 2017, I'd say, with a couple of sort of false positives in there. I don't think we're going to see much from him tomorrow. I'm not expecting to see much from him because there's, what can he really do from where he is? Unless he gets the mother of all launches and has some luck go his way in terms of accident, safety cars, all the rest of it, we're unlikely to see him sort of up to the top. And I would probably anticipate Vettel going round him as well. But also, you know, who saw Ocon winning at Hungary? So, you know, never say never. I'm just being realistic.
Yeah, never say never. But in this case, we might just say never. Olivia, P15, Carlos Sainz, and he just could not, you know, hook up a lap in Q2 if he tried. He was incredibly lucky not to, you know, end this session early anyway, because he was so close to putting in the wall. And then even on his second attempt, and completely lost it and had to abandon his lap. That Ferrari just did not look settled for him.
Yeah, no, it was nail biting when he almost went into the wall. But yeah, no, that was quite a day to forget for him. It was not a good qualifying session for him. It's quite interesting because usually he seems to have an edge over Leclerc just a tiny bit this season. So it's quite interesting for Leclerc to have the edge over him this time. So I think he will rise up in the grid, but it was quite surprising for us to see that from him, because he seems to be such a diligent driver and one not for mistakes. So maybe that's what it's going to be like tomorrow for lots of drivers, because I guess it's so narrow and so close to the wall and one mistake and you're in the wall. So maybe we'll see lots of that, more of that. So we don't know. I don't know. It's for the first time going into a track like this, you don't know what to expect, but there was quite surprising to see a P15 for Carlos, but he's not going to stay there, I doubt.
No, that Ferrari does look like it has a good pace, which has been shown by Charles Leclerc. And yeah, hopefully he can make a strategy work and maybe stay out the wall, because rear grip on that Ferrari does look a bit sketchy. Yeah. Jawad, you've got the unenviable task of talking about P16, Nicholas Latifi. just like the hustle, it's like we've got to a certain point this season now where it's really difficult to know what to say about Latifi. You know, he's just going to the end of the season before you know, hopefully like a better 2022, really, isn't he?
Mm. Well, like one thing you can take away from this qualifying, he out-qualified both the Aston Martins. So that's something, you know, like Tom said as well about George, there's not really much he can do in the race. And, you know, it's more just the entire Williams team, I think, you know, we're just looking forward to seeing what they can do in 2022 with the new lineup and hopefully, you know, further up the grid as well, you know, more into that midfield fight. And that's where we're really going to see Latifi either, you know, prove to everyone that, yeah, he does deserve a spot there at Williams for a couple more years, or that he doesn't, kind of thing, if Albon shows him up. So, yeah, not much that he can do in this race. I actually think he'll probably drop a bit further back and finish ahead of the Haases if he does survive till the end of the race. But, yeah, that's going to be just the key for tomorrow is survival.
Yeah, it could possibly be a race of attrition, and I think I'll ask for your safety car predictions later on in the podcast. Tom, yeah, the two Aston Martins, 17th and 18th. I mean, Vettel just didn't seem to have the pace, and I will say, in maybe in defense of Stroll, he came across an absolute deadlock of traffic when he went to start his lap, and I think he completely screwed up his sort of his preparation going into it, but still. 17th and 18th for Aston Martin. I know they've been inconsistent. I know they've not been great, but they've not been that bad.
No, I think both Aston's going out in Q1 is, it's not a true reflection on how that car is yet. Yeah, okay, they're not reaching the heights of when they were racing under the moniker of Racing Point last year, but they are not Q1 exit level cars. Now, they have sat on the podium twice, and yes, I am counting Hungary in that. You know, they have had some decent results. You know, Stroll got, what, P6 last week or the week before in Qatar. So take from that what you will. You could hear the disappointment in Seb's voice when he crossed the line to find out that he was P17. It's just like he was almost in disbelief. And yeah, I can see why. It was not a good showing for them, and unfortunately, I don't think they're going to do that much better this weekend. On the plus side, they will have another Aston Martin at the back of the field because obviously the medical car sits behind the pack when they start. And I think the only time we're going to see an Aston at the front is when the safety car comes out, because it is going to come out tomorrow. I'm calling it now.
Yeah, well, given the sort of F2 thing, we should expect a safety car tomorrow. And Olivia, we always save the best for last. Haas, P19, P20. Fair play to Mick. He was only a tenth off Lance Stroll, but Mazepin a further second behind. You know, anytime we talk about Haas, it's not really much we can say, but as you are new onto the podcast, maybe you can put some fresh perspective on just how miserable Haas's results have been.
I mean, just like you said, there's not much you can say. You're at the back of the grid for the whole season. What is there else that you can do? We all know they're going to be there during the race, or we don't know what could happen. But I don't know. There's not much you can say. I guess good for Mick for keeping on out-qualifying his teammate, which is quite sad for Mazepin because, I mean, what can he say at the end of the season? What much has he done at the end of the season? But, there isn't much to say for both Haas drivers. Hopefully going into 2022 with the new rules and regulations and the new power units and everything, hopefully they'll be closer up in the rankings. But as for now, yeah, no, not much to say for them.
Yeah. it's always the task I set upon someone each time to try and talk about the Haas cars. It is quite difficult.
I don't know what's worse this morning, my hangover or the Haas form, so...
I'm going to go on a limb and say the Haas form.
Yeah, no, that's being kind.
right. So that's all 20 drivers. So now it's time for the podium predictions. And I think this one is going to be quite difficult. I think Jared is the only one who sort of maybe even alluded to having a podium prediction in place. But enlighten us. Who do you think will be on the podium this week?
Do we listen to, or do we go with that little flag stuff up for F2? What was it? Verstappen, Hamilton, and Leclerc?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, look, it's hard. I think I'm going to say Hamilton, Verstappen, Leclerc. I don't know. I have a feeling it's going to happen, but I hope I'm wrong and we get a cracking race and, you know, Max can take a win away before going into the final race. But yeah, I'm going to just say Hamilton, Verstappen and Leclerc for this one.
Okay, Tom.
I think Hamilton and Verstappen are going to crash. I think Verstappen's not going to leave anything out there. And I think he's going to wipe out Hamilton and the two of them are going to DNF. And Leclerc's going to come up behind. He's going to mop up, make up retribution for Monaco.
Okay.
I'm putting it out there. and then Porridge himself is going to come home and take P2. And he's going to stay ahead of Perez in P3.
Okay. That is... We'll get to the bold predictions later, but Olivia,
I'm going to agree with Gerard on Hamilton, Verstappen, Leclerc, and knock on wood for Tom's predictions, because I feel an inconsistency with Bottas's power unit. I feel like he's going to retire. I do not think he's going to get through the full race. If he does, good for him. But I don't know. I think it worked for qualifying, but there was kind of a scare when we thought that he was going onto the weighing bridge, but he heard weird noises. But I don't think it will withstand the whole race. But yeah, no. I hope there's no crash. I mean, it would be good for entertainment, but for racing, I hope there's no crash. But I do think it could be Hamilton, Verstappen, Leclerc, podium.
I mean, we really do have the possibility of three wide into turn one. If you think about it, Bottas is on the inside, on the favoured sort of side of the grid to start. Hamilton's on older medium tyres, and then you've got Max behind, who's always a bit rapid off the start. On fresh and medium tyres, we could have absolute carnage.
I'm just remembering, was it 2018 or 17, Singapore, where we had that, you know, implosion from Seb Vettel and, like, you know, he took out his teammate and Max somehow was involved as well. Like, you know, that's what I'm picturing could happen here. But yeah. It was wet as well on the grid. So, you know, that made all the difference. But yeah, that's all I think of when I hear Tom's prediction.
Yeah, well, we'll see tomorrow. My personal prediction, I'm gonna put it out there. I'm gonna go Max Verstappen to win, Lewis Hamilton second, and I'm gonna go pretty boring, but Valtteri Bottas third. Their hand bot. We
traditions.
So now move on to the bold prediction. Jared, got a bold prediction for this race?
I'd probably be bold in saying, what if we get no safety cars at all and it just ends up being such a clean procession?
But maybe I'll actually, because I was actually going to ask each of you how many safety cars you reckon we're actually going to have in this race. But yeah, zero safety cars, I think, could actually be quite a bold prediction.
Yeah, no, because it's, where's it happened before? I forgot. I'm sure there's a street race we've had in the last couple of years where the build-up was all like, oh, it's going to be chaos and this and that. And it just ends up being, you know, just procession and trains everywhere, nothing much going on. So that's quite bold, I think.
We've had a few Monacos like that.
Yeah.
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 So that'll be, I'm sure that'll be my prediction. Then no safety cars.
Okay. Tom?
I mean, I've kind of already done mine, haven't I?
Yeah.
I don't want it to happen, but it could happen, couldn't it? Just see the two of them steaming into turn one, and I might be about to go full Welsh, but I make no apologies for it. But you might be about to see Verstappen come steam up the outside of goes Hampton, all right, Becca, and then just have the two of them just absolutely KO with each other and go, yep, see you in the lobby, bet, and then just off they go. And see him in the final week. Oh, I don't know. I got to stick with what I said, haven't I? I'm going to say there's going to be an accident between the two of them. And Toto's going to be writing emails and Horner's going to be on the blower.
For some reason, this is making me like super hyped because all I'm thinking is like they're definitely going to crash now.
Yeah.
Olivia, do you have a bold prediction?
I like Tom's, although I really don't want it to happen because I want racing. But I think because when Jos is around, I think Verstappen's always on edge. So I do see it happening. I honestly do, but I really hope it doesn't. But I would go ahead to say maybe a Red Bull 1-2. I don't know. I don't know if that could happen. I don't know. Bold. We'll see.
There's the nature of bold predictions. I have a pretty safe one, which is usually a Latifi for the points. And given this, it could be a race of high attrition. I'm going to back it. I think it could happen. But yeah, quick sort of like quick fire. So, Jared, you've said no safety cars, but realistically, how many safety cars record we're going to have?
Let's say three. I think three is a good number because safety cars breed safety cars when we go for restarts and stuff.
Yeah, Tom. Yeah, how many safety cars?
I'm going to say one. I think if there's not one early on, I think most people are going to go into tyre saving mode. And unless we have blowouts at the end, cough, Baku, cough, I don't think there'll be more than one.
Okay. Olivia?
I mean, I think now I have to kind of go for two. So, yeah, I think I'm going to go with two. Could be, yeah, seems like a safe bet to go to. I don't know.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm gonna go with Tom. I think it's gonna be one. I think if it comes, it's gonna come probably early on, and it'll sort of like somewhere midway. And I think it will just be lack of grip. Someone puts it in the wall. It won't be. I don't think it's gonna be sort of like two drivers coming together. I think it's gonna be something like signs. You know, just someone rides the curb a bit too much and it just flings them into the wall, or what like Claire did. So yeah, that's podium, bold, and safety car predictions. It's a first on the Grid Talk podcast. But that is actually all from us today. If you're watching the show live on YouTube, you'll know that we live stream. But if you're listening to this later, we live stream all of our podcasts. So make sure to subscribe to the Grid Talk podcast YouTube channel and turn notifications on so you are notified every time that we go live. You can also, it allows you to watch the shows early, and you can also ask us questions in the comments. We're also available on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Omni Studio, Verbal, as well as the F1 Chronicle website. Just search for the F1 Grid Talk podcast. We have a huge back catalog of over 150 shows. So if you are stuck for something to listen to, maybe between now and the race, or even between this race and the next one in Abu Dhabi, we have loads of shows for you to listen to, not just sort of race reviews, but we also have documentary style ones about Ayrton Senna and the 1994 Benetton conspiracy, as well as interviews with Mario Izzola from Pirelli. Also, if you give us a 5-star review on iTunes, we will also give you a shout out in our next show. We have a Patreon, so if you'd like to support the podcast and help towards better mics, lights, and recording equipment for our hosts, any support is greatly appreciated. So now it's time for the plugs. and just let us know where we can find you and where to find your work. So, Jared, would you like to start?
Yeah, so you can find Hit the Apex podcast on Twitter at Hit the Apex Media. Currently doing weekly shows because we've got race reviews every week. And this week coming will be quite special with the Bathurst 1000 on in a few hours' time as well. So I'll be all over that on next week's show and, of course, with the Saudi Grand Prix as well. So, yeah, give us a follow. Just me talking about stuff I like, really. So this is and bit of good fun as well. So, yeah, last couple of episodes for the year. Before a nice, well-earned break, I think.
Yeah. Olivia, where can we find more from you?
I write for f1total.ca. So I cover Friday practice sessions and the occasional qualifying session. And in the middle of the week, I write about any news that unfolds. Sometimes I cover news for my university newspaper, F1 News from my university newspaper, the University of Toronto. So you can catch that on Cairo Olivia on Twitter. Just those two.
And Tom, where can we find more from you?
Yeah, so I'm part of Everything F1. You can find us at everythingf1.com, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, which is at JoinTheF1. And on Facebook, we have our group, the Everything F1 Paddock. You can also find us on YouTube, which is the Everything F1 YouTube channel. As the F1 theme starts playing on my headset. Sorry, I've still got the F2 on. Also, we have the Everything F1 podcast where we have some really, really good guests. We had Tom Gaynor on last week, where we previewed this weekend now. Talked to him about his career, all the rest of it. You can find that on Apple Music, Spotify, all your favourite podcasting locations. I forget them all, to be honest, and also on our website.
And God forbid you want to hear more from me, I write for sportlightpro.com, where I cover Formula One as well as various other sports. So yes, that's sportlightpro.com if you want to see more from me. I want to thank all of my guests for joining me today, and we'll be back tomorrow at 8:30 UK time to review the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. So until then, goodbye.